Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is coming up next. Audio and podcast of The Steve Jones Show, a service of Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Well, welcome to SJS on this Tuesday. We live in a world where we're trying to accelerate life. Kevin, of course, brought that up yesterday with his impassioned plea to have a Stanley Cup game end with a shootout, which is really great. It's like having a field goal kickoff in the Super Bowl. Let's just do that. A home run derby in the World Series. Let's do a slam dunk contest. Roll out a couple chairs, see if Blake Griffin can clear them in an NBA playoff game. Let's see. What else can we do? Oh, how about in the Masters? Let's long drive contest. How do you feel about that?
I'm all right with long drive contest. That's not closest to the pin.
Meanwhile, Justin Bieber was booed while accepting the Milestone Award. Milestone for what?
That's what I was just going to say.
Frank Sinatra had milestones, okay?
What's the minimum you have to have in your career? 3 years?
Okay. He says, I'm 19 years old. I think I'm doing a pretty good job, which in his career he is. And basically from my heart, I just really want to say that it really should be about the music. Okay, this is not a gimmick. I'm an artist. I should be taken seriously. You're 19 years old. 19. Okay. Where you are at 19, okay, should not be the pinnacle of your life. Okay, should not be the pinnacle of your life. Okay. I've told kids this before, and I've told the kids in the classroom this, but I've also told kids younger than this. It doesn't matter, and this goes to, let's do on a completely serious subject now, okay? That's a very important subject. And Giselle Studevant of the Lady Lion basketball team has written a book about bullying, all right? And bullying is bad. It's awful. It wrecks and ruins self-esteem. It does, and it has long-lasting effects. And people have to overcome that. And I've told kids that are 14, 15, 16 years old, I said, you know what? It does not matter in life where you are at 15. Because at the age of 15, essentially, unless you're Chris Evert, you haven't accomplished anything at the age of 15. Unless you have gone out and you've done something to help others. Say you end up being an Eagle Scout, for example, and you put together a project that helps other people. Those are accomplishments in life at the age of 15. Doing well on an SAT, doing well on a test, whatever. They're all building blocks of life, but you haven't accomplished your station in life yet. It matters in life where you are when you're 25. Where you're 35, 45, 55, 65. That's where it matters as to what you've done in your life. You haven't accomplished a lot yet at the age of 15. So there's no reason for you to bully that individual over there because guess what? You haven't accomplished it. Who are you? Who are you? What have you done? Who are you? Well, I'm the starting quarterback on whatever football. Yeah, what, on a high school football team? Ooh. Hey, good for you. Okay, great. You started quarterback for the Bears? No. And that's why I've told, you know, like he says, I'm 19, okay? Now, he's accomplished a lot, obviously, for the age of 19, although I can't tell you one single thing. I don't think I've ever heard him sing anything before. You know, but then again, I'm 55. Why should I? He says, I'm 19 years old, right? I should be taken seriously. Well, I suppose. All right, but it's going to matter more in life where he is when he's 29, 39, 49, 59, when he's a parent, when he's having to work. I don't know. Who knows? His life could be so great he probably doesn't have to work anymore because he's made a lot of money at this stage of his life. But where you are when you're 10, 15, 16, 17, you know, you can't make it so high school is the pinnacle of your life. You have to make it an important stepping stone in your life to set up the next stage. Because it really matters where you are when you're 30, 40, 50, and 60. That's where it matters. What are you doing at that point to be a good parent, to be a good community member, to be, you know, whatever? That's where it matters. That's why I found it interesting. Like, you know, he gets the milestone award. I'm like, what? The milestone for what? Milestone awards should be given for long-term achievement, and they also should be given before somebody passes away. Okay? Very important. I've always felt that. I don't know about you, but I've always felt that. Kevin is now recording this to play back to his kid. What do you
No, I don't understand how you can give somebody a milestone award that is, well, 119 and hasn't had 20 right. years of a career in anything.
Right. Yeah, I feel that, you know, so I'll give you an example, all right? I'd like to see Fran Fischer honored one more time.
Absolutely.
Okay? I would like to see Fran honored one more time in his life. Somehow, some way, because of what he's meant to our industry and what he's meant to the state. And he's somebody who's given back a lot. I'll bet just through pure effort, he's given back more than this kid has. Now, this kid may be able to give back in terms of money, but, you know, life's more than just money. All right. And you can tell that he's not exactly on a roll of late in terms of how he's handling himself. He did something very immature in Europe dealing with the Holocaust, something very immature. And so, you know, I think he's got to step back for a little bit.
He's been a bit of a PR nightmare.
Yeah, that's called immaturity. Immaturity is a big problem. I mean, what's next? He's got to tell us we should have a shootout in the Stanley Cup overtime?
Yeah, brother, here we go. I should get a milestone award for just that idea right there.
Oh, I don't think that'd be a milestone award. It'd be a different kind of award and a different looking trophy. All right. First of all, above the noise, here's Dan Patrick.
I'm Dan Patrick, and this is Above the Noise.
Ready for a quality pre-owned vehicle? Well, get them before they go to auction at Sunbury Motors. Go to sunburymotors.com and click on Pre-Auction Blowout. With so many great deals in bloom, you'll be thinking spring. Like a 2012 Ford Fiesta 5-door hatchback SE. Call for our lowest price promise, 888-536-8017. 2012 Hyundai Veloster 3-door coupe with black interior, $16,889. 2012 Kia Sorento 4-wheel drive LX, $16,999. It's one tough truck. A 2010 Ford F-150 Super Crew, just $25,998. And a 2010 Jeep Wrangler Unlimited 4-door Sahara, $26,994. All come with a Carfax report and our lowest price promise. Pre-auction blowout. 24/7 at sunburymotors.com, at the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at our dealership, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sunbury Motors, a tradition of trust since 1915.
Heading out to San Francisco for the Labor Day weekend show.
Oh, brother.
Well, all right, so it won't be Labor Day weekend, but, you know.
Ugh. This is one of the easiest calls I've ever had to make. I mean, they only made a 15-minute presentation, San Francisco, to get Super Bowl 50. It is a stadium that should be ready for the 2014 season. They'll play one more year at Candlestick Park. They'll be ready for the 2014 season. It is wired. Not wired. It is everything that a modern stadium is exactly what they want. It is ticketless. You don't have to leave your seat to get concessions. It has 75,000 seats that are Wi-Fi capable. That was pretty much the end of the presentation, from what I understand.
Well, yeah, listen, when I can pick where the next two Super Bowls are going to be played before the announcement's made, that tells you how easy it's going to be to make that prediction.
Did Houston get the other one?
Houston got L.I.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, that was another one that was pretty easy to see coming. Well, technically, yeah. It's not San Francisco. It'll be Santa Clara that hosts it, but
well, it's in Santa Clara. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, that's just the technical.
Which has been the 49ers' home for a long. Their practice facility's in Santa Clara. Has been in Santa Clara for a long time, and it's interesting. I've been to it. It's really basic. Penn State played in the Cable Car Basketball Classic, which Santa Clara hosted. And they had Steve Nash at the time. And Penn State won the tournament. They won it. They beat Nash and Santa Clara, and then beat Bradley for the championship after they beat Marbury and Georgia Tech. All four teams made the NCAA tournament that year. That's how good this tournament was. And Danny Earle outplayed Steve Nash. Just literally outplayed him. Earle had like 17 points, like 8 or 9 assists. Nash had like 10 and 4 or something like that. And this is one of those nights. Danny outplayed him. But I think people forget, Nash, of course, has had a great career with the Mavericks, the Suns, and now the Lakers. People forget that Danny Earle, you know, he had back problems and so forth. He was third-team All-USA today when he signed with Penn State. Third-team All-USA today. USA Today thought he was one of the top 15 players in the country. Smart. I mean, Danny should be a head coach at some point in his lifetime. He really should be a head coach. I know he's tried to get involved in a couple of jobs along the line. I think he tried to get involved with the Monmouth job, I want to say 2 years ago. But the tournament took place at the Shark Tank in San Jose, where the San Jose Sharks play. We stayed in Santa Clara right next to the 49ers practice facility. So Santa Clara has been the home of the 49ers actually for a long time. It just turns out they're now going to build a stadium there. And this stadium is going to be 75,000 seats. And as I said, it's going to be a ticketless facility. It is going to be a facility where you can order from your seat, concessions and so forth. And it is a facility that is Wi-Fi, all 75 seats Wi-Fi capable. Welcome to the 21st Century Stadium.
Remember a couple of weeks ago we were talking about the first coach that might get fired in Major League Baseball? And we were talking about Charlie Manuel being on that list. I think Don Mattingly may be on the top of the list right now.
Could be, but it's not his fault. It's interesting is that when one of his top three starters goes, they're like way over 500. When four and five go, they can't win a game.
I mean, they've got all sorts of issues.
When their top two starters are going, they're unbeatable. Anybody else goes, they have problems.
Andre Ethier got ejected in the eighth for arguing balls and strikes. And then have a stare down with Dan Bellino.
Yeah, but this is the team that it's the way the team is constructed, not him. He'll be the one that pays.
Right.
Yeah, everybody has their own way of doing things. Vinny Del Negro got let go by the Clippers today. They won 56 games this year. Okay? Franchise record for a franchise that is the definition of star-crossed. I mean, there's a reason why they're in the draft lottery every year until recently. Now, I'm not saying that Del Negro is the greatest coach ever, but, you know, he led the Bulls to a couple of playoff bids, but I think the Bulls are better now with Tom Thibodeau. Thibodeau's a really good coach. But Donald Sterling runs the Clippers, and I wouldn't want Donald Sterling running the YMCA. Obviously, I'm not applying for a job there anytime soon. I have no plans to do stuff like that. But, yeah. Now, we have news coming up, bottom of the hour. Then we're going to bring in Josh Yowie, Pittsburgh Tribune Review, to talk about the Penguins. You know what the Penguins-Ottawa game got the other night in Pittsburgh for a rating?
No.
Not a share, but a rating.
Okay.
26.
That's the rating?
That's the rating, not the share.
Wow.
The rating was 26.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome. Great to have you with us on this very warm Tuesday. Doesn't feel like hockey weather, does it?
Hockey is the last thing I would be thinking about in this weather.
Kevin, all excited about a Super Bowl that is years away?
Not that excited.
But this is, I mean, look, people could talk about how when Miami went after it and they didn't get the state support for redoing parts of the stadium, renovations and so forth, they were never going to get this. This stadium was going to get this no matter what. This is exactly what the NFL wants. Hey, different venue for one thing. They've only been to this part of the country once with the Super Bowl. That was Super Bowl 19 when they played at Stanford Stadium, antiquated and torn down. Okay. And you have now what's going to be a modern palace. That is what they want. They want a ticketless facility. They've always wanted that. A lot of people want that now. And the same thing with, you know, fan convenience, so forth. They want all of this. And this stadium provides the amenities that they're looking for. Now, they're going to take it to New York this year. Penn State, of course, is going to play in MetLife on the 31st. We're 100 days today from the opener. Okay, 100 days. And they will play the Super Bowl there in early February. Now, in my guess is it'll probably be a day where it's probably going to be in the upper 30s, lower 40s.
That's what I was just going to ask
you about. It's probably not going to be as bad as everyone says it's going to be. I mean, you know, look, could it be brutal? Yeah, it could be brutal. I mean, it could be a day where it's, you know, 15 to 25 degrees and windy with a swirl of snow. It could be that because it's the first, you know, Sunday in February. I know. But in all likelihood, it's probably going to be in the mid to upper 30s, maybe 40 degrees.
Well, I did some research on that because I was interested about it. February 1st, the average high is 57. The average low is about 45.
Right.
And daily low temperatures are around 45, falling below 39 or above 52 for only one day in 10.
Yeah, but you do, you know, you worry about the possibility of a nor'easter, for example. And that's a prime area that would get hit by a nor'easter. New England extending toward New York. Okay. You do worry about that.
Well, no, I was talking about the weather in San Francisco.
Oh, San Francisco! No, that's easy. Yeah. San Francisco's fine. That's I'm talking about New York.
Yeah, I know. I apologize. I was talking about San Francisco's weather. I was really surprised that.
No, but yeah, but you don't look up San Francisco's weather. Santa Clara's weather is not San Francisco's weather. It's not.
Okay, really?
San Francisco. No, it is not. You look up San Jose's weather. Okay, what's the average in San Jose on that particular day? All right, because San Francisco is different. It is pocketed the way it is set up with the bay and so forth. San Francisco is different.
All right, let's give you an example. San Jose, California, this year, February 2nd, the temperature was 57. The low is 45, so your average high is 60, and the average low is 43.
Right.
And then you figure, too, if this is, say, what, a 6:30-ish kick in the east, that's a mid-afternoon kick in the West Coast. So you're looking at probably the warmest part of the day, as opposed to kicking it off under the lights in New York.
Right, and then we'll kick it off under the lights in New York. All right, so let's get to hockey. Josh Yowie, Pittsburgh Tribune Review, joins us. He's joined us many times. Beat writer for the Penguins. Josh, let's just make this simple. What on God's green earth happened on that power play at the end of the game?
Well, I have analyzed the play many times, and I can tell you that three different players, Chris Kunitz, Chris Letang, and Evgeny Malkin, all really made executional mistakes. And you could certainly argue that Dan Bylsma shouldn't have had a couple of those players on the ice to begin with. You're protecting a one-goal lead with a minute left, and even though you have your have a power play, it was kind of like having your base 4-3 defense in a football game, and the other team has five wide receivers and throwing a Hail Mary. You just, yeah, it's just not playing the situation properly.
But, you know, Josh, I look at this, and I remember thinking as I watched it play out that I felt like the game was handed to them on a silver platter. You know, this is one of the finest passing power plays I've seen in years. I just felt just go at them and just go at them normally because they can't pull the goalie if you're going at them. How did you look right at it?
Well, yeah, you do one of two things. You either just put your defensive-minded players on the ice and just play it as though it were a five-on-five situation, or if you're going to go with the power play, exactly, to do what you would normally do. Don't take yourself out of your normal rhythm. You've got the best power play in hockey right now. Just use it and possess the puck, and instead they became extremely passive. And so many things happen. You know, the Penguins play with Crosby and Malkin on the power play, so Malkin in defensive situations is essentially playing the right wing on the power play. And so that's why he was out of position and didn't know what to do, because he's naturally a center, but all of a sudden he had the winger responsibilities, and he ended up handling neither of them. So it just led to a number of mistakes, quite honestly.
All right, so now they get through that. Vokoun's been good. I mean, I think, in fact, I think in a loss he actually played better in a loss than he has in a couple of wins. Your thoughts on his play and what Dan Bylsma wants to do moving forward? Because I always feel like those decisions make themselves.
Yeah, I think when it's time for Fleury to return to the lineup, we will all know. And I think they're going to ride Vokoun while he's hot, and I can't criticize them for that. I thought he was terrific in Game 3. He's the kind of guy who isn't going to steal many games. Yeah, there are not going to be too many games when you say, man, was he great. But he's almost always going to be good. And when you have this talented of a team that scores so many goals almost every game, maybe good is all you need in net. So he's been good, and I fully expect them to just keep riding him as long as he keeps playing well.
For Ottawa, Anderson played well in net. There's no question about that. But it looked like Carlson, who's been one of the better defensemen in the league anyway, actually played like it the other night. Is that what you saw?
Yeah, he was better, certainly. In the games 1 and 2 in Pittsburgh, he was not himself. Now, is he at 100% for, you know, things we've seen him do in the past? Absolutely not. I mean, I think you could argue that they rushed him back from that Achilles injury. That was a really serious injury, and he only missed a couple of months. That's unusual and risky, I think, with a 22-year-old kid as talented as he is. But he played a whale of a game the other night, and their other injured guy who returned was Jason Spezza.
Yes.
He was pretty invisible. I mean, I give him credit for rushing back to the lineup, but it takes a lot of courage to come back after back surgery 3 months and play. But, boy, he got lit up by a Craig Adams hit in overtime, and he, frankly, wasn't real noticeable. So I'll be interested to gauge how he looks tomorrow.
But what does happen, though, in a situation like that is that it's not just his presence back. He probably helped his wingers by being back, though, just by mere presence, don't you think?
Oh, yeah, and I think he gave this whole city a bit of a charge. I mean, the atmosphere was pretty electric when he took the ice before the game. And I mean, he's a presence. He's one of the 10 most talented centers in hockey, so it certainly affects a little bit the way the Penguins play them. And, of course, he does make people around him better. He didn't play a bad game, but he certainly didn't look like he was at 100% capabilities of what we've seen him do in the past.
How do you feel about the matchup? Now you've seen it three games. How do you know? And there are certain things, for example, you look at Chicago playing Detroit as an example. Zetterberg really matches up with Taves. I mean, it's mm-hmm. kind of taking him completely. He's got him. Taves has become invisible with Zetterberg on the ice. How do you feel about the matchup with Ottawa? How do they now, after three games, match up with this team?
Well, yeah, you're right, and I think the Blackhawks are in trouble just from what I've seen in that series, and that's one of the big reasons. But this series, to me, is much different. I give the Senators credit for what they've done. They're just a good, young, hardworking team. They're going to be around for many years, but they just don't really have the guys to match up with Crosby and Malkin for a seven-game series. Now, Malkin was great last night. He did everything but score. You know, Crosby was a little off, I thought, in Game 3, but I just feel like the Penguins are just a supremely talented team compared to Ottawa, and I think as long as they just stay patient and keep playing the same way, I don't see them losing the series. And honestly, a lot of the Penguins told me after the game, they said, defensively, that was the best game we've played all playoffs. We just had literally one lapse at the wrong time. I mean, most of that third period, boy, they closed the door in Ottawa. They didn't have many chances, so I tend to agree with what the Penguins said, and if they just keep playing like this, so they're going to be tough to beat. I don't see Ottawa winning three of the next four against them.
Right, and I think I agree with that. I think that it's an awfully tall proposition. I believe Ottawa has seven rookies on this team.
Yeah, oh yeah, they're a very young team, and yeah. And their coach Paul McLean, he is nominated for the Jack Adams Award for Coach of the Year.
He should be
shocked if he doesn't win it. He's done a marvelous job, and he does have seven rookies, and they're all really good, by the way. This team's going to be strong for quite some time. But they're playing the most talented team in the National Hockey League. And just from being around the Penguins the past couple of days, this is a very aggravated hockey team after what happened the other night. And I think you're going to see them play very well in Game 4.
How close, I mean, I'm sure you're keeping an eye on what else is happening. It's Rangers, Bruins tonight, Kings, and Sharks tonight. And how have you looked at those two series? Let's start with the MSG.
You know, I picked the Rangers to win that series, and it's not looking so hot right now. Two pretty impressive performance from the Bruins. You know, Boston's banged up. I don't think they're going to sweep that series, but they don't strike me as the type of squad that will blow a 2-0 lead either. And I think L.A. will win the series against the Sharks. Now, San Jose is a good team, but, boy, I wouldn't want to play L.A. right now. I think they might be the favorites in the West all of a sudden. They, you know, there's a defending champs, and Chicago suddenly looks really vulnerable to me. L.A. has won six or seven games now in the playoffs, so I think L.A. will emerge with a victory in that series.
You know, what's amazing about Los Angeles is that when they played the series and they finally opened at home, it's the first time since 1992 they've had home ice advantage in a playoff series. I mean, the first time since 92. That's how sorry the franchise has been. And now they drop the puck and they tell them, hey, look, it's May and June. And like they think, and now they think they're the Montreal Canadiens from the 60s with Jean Beliveau.
Yeah, they're the rare team that seems to have that ability to flip on the switch in the playoffs. And you're not supposed to be able to do that in hockey. And most teams can't. But, boy, they just know how to do it. They're just physical. They just beat you up. And Jonathan Quick is maybe the best goalie in hockey right now. He is really great. And if you want to look down the road to the Olympics next year, which, you know, Olympic hockey has become a really big deal, he will be the Team USA goaltender. And Team USA might have a real chance to win a gold medal because of him. That kid's really great.
Yeah, he is really, really. As well as Miller played, I thought, in 2010 at Vancouver, Quick's is an upgrade in net for the United States.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Now, the other one, we briefly touched on Detroit-Chicago. Chicago should be the overwhelming favorite. In fact, during the regular season, they really did not struggle with Detroit. They're struggling now. Why?
They didn't? Well, Henrik Zetterberg, other than Crosby and Malkin, perhaps, is the best player in the league right now. He's been great, and Jimmy Howard, the Detroit goaltender, has been great. And I'll just tell you, just... You know, I've watched every game in that series, actually. I've just worked out, so I've been able to watch it. And Detroit is not just up 2-1. They dominated their two victories.
Yes.
And they made Chicago look bad the last two games. And, yeah, Pittsburgh and L.A. both lost a game in their respective series, but they were hardly dominated. A lot of fortunate things had to happen for their opposition to win those games. That's not the case in Chicago-Detroit. And the Red Wings still have a lot of world-class players, and for whatever reason, Chicago looks a little vulnerable and a little rattled to me, so I certainly picked them to win that series, but I think Detroit's got a 50-50 shot to win that. I really do.
Has what we've seen play out over the last couple of weeks really allowed fans, whether it's television or in the arena, to put the troubles in the rearview mirror and make it really small?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's frustrating in a way because fans should not forget what happened during this lockout and during the past year. A lot of bad things happened for the sport, and it's hard to ignore. But gosh, if you like hockey, I mean, boy, this is a great time of year. These games are all just really sensational. And, I mean, the TV ratings in Pittsburgh the other night, they got a 26 rating, which is extraordinary.
Oh.
And that's basically, that's almost Steeler level. And there was almost 700,000 people in the greater Pittsburgh area watching that game. And it's just incredible, the popularity of this team. And the popularity of the sport doesn't seem to have been affected by the lockouts.
Josh, always a pleasure. Hey, thanks a lot for the time. Appreciate your insight anytime.
Josh Yowie joining us. Working on Timmy Doyle, by the way. Get Timmy D on. And we had talked about Jim Nantz being on the show this week. When Ken Venturi passed away Friday, he had to change his plans, and we, with all due respect, will reschedule with Jim Nantz. Vince Welsh on tomorrow. For Kevin, 20 minutes of broadcast on air Nirvana.
Nirvana would be a great word to use. Yeah, that's exactly what it'll be.
We'll get Vince's feel as to who can make 800 successful left turns first.
Oh, please don't tell him that.
I might leave with that.
Oh, brother.
I speak for America.
That's a sad state of affairs.
Just having you toss and turn all night at the possibility I might do it is worth it.
Yeah, no, that's not going to happen. I do not worry myself over that.
Oh, yes, you do. Well, don't do that to Vince Welsh. Don't. You don't care what I do to anybody else. Don't do that to Vince Welsh. Don't do that to Jaggerroot. Don't do that to... So, who's going to make 800 left turns faster than anybody else, Vince? And you're like, you okay?
I'm fine.
You don't sound it.
I'm fine.
We're in the Sunbury Motors studio, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Kia, where it's 11 to 15, Hummel's Wharf. Great time to deal. Hilsa's General Store hotline open, 800-795-9565. Love to hear from you. Go to www.hilsherstore.com. And don't forget, 7 miles south, the Sealands Grove, routes 11 to 15, the 21st Century General Store. You go in there. It's an unbelievable experience going there. The number of items that they have, it really is one-stop shopping. We will come back with more. Tim Owen, Blue White Illustrated, next half hour. As Kevin takes one break after another here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Well, ESPN has enough cash to bankroll the Longhorn Network. They have enough to start an SEC network because, you know, with the idea they're going to make a lot of money off of it. And very quietly under the radar, a lot of people don't know this, but they went out and they stole in its entirety the complete U.S. Open Tennis Championship from CBS this week.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. No, no. Today, they promptly laid off 400 people. What's going on? Now, I realize that ESPN's, you know, you're talking about an $8 billion, okay, with a B, $8 billion entity. They have 7,000 employees, 4,000 work in Bristol. So 10% of the Bristol staff was cut. Now, Disney's done this in other areas. They've done it in their new video arts division. They've done it in their motion picture division. They've laid off some people, and maybe not 10%, but they've laid off people. But they're saying that, you know, that they're doing this because they want to make sure their profits continue to stay where they need to be. Okay. Stuff like that confuses me. In other words, you're making money. To me, the excuse to have somebody lose a job is if the company's losing money.
the statement from ESPN was, we're implementing changes across the company to enhance our continued growth.
I have two letters for their statement. Okay, the first one's B. Okay, the second one's S.
Here's the last part of it. While difficult, we are confident that it will make us more competitive, innovative, and productive. Uh-huh.
Wait. Really?
And it's not just people that were with ESPN for a couple of months or a year.
Oh, no.
I mean, one of them was
there 10 years.
Yeah, almost 10 years.
Yeah. Something that's, you know, stunning. I mean, hate to see that. I mean, they're expanding. I mean, everywhere you look, they're expanding something, and you let people go? I mean, when you pay your cable bill, I'll tell you right now what the most expensive channel is on there. I mean, like, it is not even close.
And
it is ESPN.
How?
It's not even close as to what. The difference between the most expensive channel, ESPN, and what's second place is a chasm. Now, they've seen, obviously, costs have skyrocketed. Prices for broadcasting rights to live sports have gone way up. But they've been announcing one mega deal after another. Tim Owen, Blue White Illustrated, joins us next half hour. Tomorrow, Vince Welsh from the Indianapolis Motor Speedway and Kevin's version of Nirvana. We will go to the mountain and get wisdom.